Vale.
I'm going to be back at it, wait until he actually starts.
Or you can just trim it after.
Okay, we ready? Okay, we're going to take the first 5 minutes to briefly review and recap what we discussed in the first two shiurim. The highlights, because it's been a whole vacation ago. A good 3 weeks ago. That we had the second shiur, and the first shiur was 5 weeks ago. So let's just briefly review. In the first year, we talked about Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim. We talked about the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, Maimonides and Nachmanides, as to whether Olam Haba is with body, that's according to the Ramban, after Tchias HaMesim, or Olam Haba is only soul without body. Related to that machlokes is, according to the Rambam, after Shkias HaMesim, body and soul are reunited, but then they're separated again. Call it death, if you will. And then the soul returns to Olam Haba, maybe more refined on a higher level. According to the Ramban, once body and soul are reunited at Shkias HaMesim, body and soul are together forever. And that means forever, not just figuratively, but literally. And the soul raises the body to a much higher level than it is nowadays. It's raised to the level of Adam HaRishon before he ate from the Eitz HaDaas. Adam HaRishon's body before he ate from the Eitz HaDaas. Chazal say he saw from one end of the world to the other, whether it means literally, physically, or spiritually. But Adam HaRishon's body was on a totally different level, much more refined, much more uplifted, much more spiritual. That is what the body is going to be like after Tchias HaMesim, to the extent that a body will not need to eat, will not need to sleep. And when we analyzed machlokes between the Rambam and Ramban, we came to the conclusion that it's really a disagreement about the nature of the human body. According to the Rambam, the body is merely utilitarian for this world, for the soul to interface with this world. According to the Ramban, the body is much higher, deeper concept. It's not merely utilitarian. It is something which is spiritual, which needs to be cleansed, which needs to be refined, which needs to be uplifted. And that happens as part of a process here, doing mitzvos in this world, being buried after death, and then again being reunited with the soul in Tchias HaMesim, in Olam Haba. That was the first year in general. And we mentioned that most people agree with most authorities, that is, agree with the Ramban. From there, we moved into why Tchias HaMesim is so important. Why is Tchias HaMesim a highlight of every single Shmona Esrei we daven? No matter Shabbos, Yom Tov, weekday, we always mention Tchias HaMesim. We never mention it less than 5 times in Shmona Esrei. What makes it one of the 13 principles of belief? Why is it so important? Why, even if you believe in reward and punishment, that's not enough? You have to believe in Tchias HaMesim. And everybody believes in Tchias HaMesim, every believing Jew. And we mentioned the Leshem Shevova Achlama, Rav Elyashiv Zatzal's grandfather, the great Kabbalist, Rav Shlomo Elyashiv, who wrote that sefer. It's called the Bala Leshem, the author of the Leshem Shevova Achlama, and he explains that Tchias HaMesim, everything that was wrong in this world is righted, everything is made meaningful, even things that we cannot understand, that trouble us, that eat away at our souls. In Olam Haba, in Tchias HaMesim, it all becomes clear, and it's all forever. This world is finite in time. Tchias HaMesim, Olam Haba, is not finite in time. It is infinite in time. And everything that happens in this world is corrected retroactively from the root after Tchias HaMesim. That's why it's such an essential belief. It's not just that we believe there's a reward and punishment, but that nothing goes to waste, and everything will make sense, and everything that we go through, all the trials and tribulations and travails and suffering in this world, will be righted, will be understood, and will be appreciated after Tchias HaMesim in Olam Haba. It is an incredible, incredible conclusion to the history of the world, the history of the universe. That's why it's so essential to our beliefs. That's why it's one of the 13 beliefs of the Rambam. That's why we mention it every single Shmon Esrei, right after we talk about our personal relationship to Hashem through our fathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and about how kind Hashem is to us. We get right to Kriyas HaMesim. Why do we mention it five times in that bracha? So the Mekubalim point out because there are five different levels of the soul. Those levels, moving from bottom to top, are Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, Yechida. Every single one of those will be rejuvenated, restored, brought back to life, reunited with the body in Kriyas HaMesim. That is why it's five separate times. There is a question we did not deal with, and that is, why is Kriyas HaMesim not explicit in the Torah? Why is Kriyas HaMesim not in the Torah at all? Well, at all is a little going overboard. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and elsewhere, but primarily in Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin, discusses that Kriyas HaMesim is alluded to in the Torah a number of times. Hashem makes promises to Avram and Yitzhak and Yaakov that they will receive the land. They didn't receive it. After Kriyas HaMesim, they receive it. Az Yashir Moshe of Bnei Yisrael, then Moshe and Bnei Yisrael will sing. What do you mean then? They sang right? No, they're going to sing again. Kriyas HaMesim, and similar psukim to these. So the Gemara derives allusions to Kriyas HaMesim from the Torah. Why is Kriyas HaMesim not explicit in the Torah? This question bothered no less a mind than the mind of the Rambam, and he says as follows. He says, although the Torah was given to all generations, the Torah was given to those standing at Har Sinai in the Midbar, and it had to be relevant and accessible to them as the primary receivers of the Torah. He says there is no way that that generation would be able to believe in the coming back to life, in the reuniting of body and soul. It would just be too much for them. Is it a Torah truth? Yes. Is it an important belief? Yes. But they couldn't handle it. That's why Hashem did not give it over explicitly in the Torah. It took generation after generation of seeing Hashem's miracles, of being educated by Hashem, of reward and punishment, and then the Rambam says of seeing Kriyas HaMesim, of hearing about Kriyas HaMesim, Eliyahu HaNavi bringing the dead to life, Elisha restoring a boy to life after he died, the dry bones of Yechezkel coming back to life. The Rambam says about all of these that these happened, Hashem made them happen, so that the belief of Kriyas HaMesim can be real for us, so when we can appreciate it. And so it is something which becomes real, and it's not fantasy, and we don't just write it off as, nah, it can't be. Many people nowadays who are very scientifically oriented wave their hands and go, nah, it's not true, it doesn't mean it, Ruach Ra, or other things the Gemara mentions, they wave it off. The generation at the time of the reception of the Torah would wave off Kriyas HaMesim, but now, thank God, throughout the generations of Mesorah, of the giving over of the Torah, of the great people that have existed in Klal Yisrael, the masters of Mesorah, and the great Nevi'im who actually did Kriyas HaMesim. Kriyas HaMesim is an easier belief, and when Chazal felt everybody was ready to handle it, so Chazal revealed Kriyas HaMesim explicitly to us. That is the Rambam's approach to why Kriyas HaMesim is not explicit in the Torah. There are other approaches. The other approaches, one of them is the approach of the Maharal. The Maharal Miprag lived a few hundred years after the Rambam. He lived in the 1500s. The Maharal says the reason why Kriyas HaMesim is not in the Torah is because the Torah is given b'nevuah. Kriyas HaMesim can be comprehended not through nevuah because it's beyond nevuah. Nevi'im can't see Kriyas HaMesim. They don't know what it's about. It is through Chachma. When somebody studies the Torah, delves into the Torah deeply, and his mind becomes one with Torah, then he can comprehend Chiyas HaMesim, says the Maharal. Chiyas HaMesim is therefore revealed by the Chachamim, who intuited it and figured it out, not in the Torah, not through Nevuah. That's what the Gemara means when it says in Bava Basra, Chacham Adif Minavi, a wise person who studies Torah deeply, is ahead, is preferable to a prophet, because he can access secrets of the universe that Hashem created and Hashem wants us to believe in a deeper, broader way than even a prophet. It's a very interesting idea of the Maharal. Others have another idea. This is a little bit controversial, and this is the final idea we'll discuss now, of why Tchiyas HaMesim is not explicit in the Torah, and that is because, as the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, better serve God for God's sake, not for your own sake. How does it say in Pirkei Avos? Al tiyu ka'avadim ha-mishamshim esarav al menas l'kabel pras, ela hevu ka'avadim ha-mishamshim esarav shelo al menas l'kabel pras. Serve God not with intent on condition to receive reward, rather serve God just because serve the Master for His sake. Once Tchiyas HaMesim is introduced, so then, it's really for our sake. In the end, we're all going to get rewarded. It's all going to be good. No. We don't mention the ultimate reward, the ultimate punishment, that where all the scores are evened out after this world, because we're supposed to serve God l'shma. The reason why I say that this answer is controversial is because the Torah itself says in a number of places, if v'hayachim shamoa, most famously, if you serve God, it'll all be good. If you serve Avodah Zarah, then everything is going to be bad. So they would answer to that question that these type of parshios in the Torah are really not reward and punishment. That's just the nature of the world. Hashem created the world based on Torah, and when we chase Hashem out of the world, He leaves the world, and bad things start to happen. When we bring Hashem into the world, we recognize Him, we do mitzvahs, we don't serve Avodah Zarah, then Hashem is here, Hashem is closer, and good times roll. Okay, but that's just the nature of the world. That's not reward and punishment per se, whereas Tchiyas HaMesim would be reward and punishment, and that is why it's not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Those last couple of points round out our discussion for now of Tchiyas HaMesim, which is, according to the Ramban, forever. According to the Rambam, leads into the forever. So if we ask the question at the beginning, what happens to us after we die? Well, for most of the time, there will be Olam Haba, whether it's following the stage of Tchiyas HaMesim, or it is Tchiyas HaMesim, and that lasts forever, body and soul. That is what we have discussed. Now, people raise the question, what about Gilgal? What about what people translate generally as reincarnation? So that we discussed in the last year. There are two different opinions of reincarnation, of Gilgal in Judaism. Some people don't accept it. The Rambam's son, Rav Sadia Gaon, many do accept it. I would say, venture to say, most authorities do accept Gilgal. And the reason why we introduced Gilgal was, how do we square Gilgal reincarnation with Tchiyas HaMesim? Which body comes back? What's going on here? So last time we just laid down the framework and we talked about Gilgal. Gilgal does not mean you're the exact same person as your previous time around. No, it might be the same neshama. It might be sparks of the same neshama. There are different ideas of Gilgal, of Ibor, but there is definitely a relationship, maybe a similar personality, but there is that idea of Gilgal in Judaism. It's definitely different bodies, but maybe the same soul, maybe sparks of the same soul. But how is that squared with Tchiyas HaMesim? Now, when we began 5 weeks ago, I told the story of a fellow who asked the rabbi as to whether after Tchiyas HaMesim he gets his first wife back or his second wife back. Remember that? So, and the story was, the first wife used to berate him publicly and embarrass him, and his second wife was very sweet to him, and he was definitely afraid after Tchiyas HaMesim he was getting his first wife back. Remember that? So the question is, okay, we got to answer that question now. push comes to shove? You get the first wife back or the second wife back? How does that work? So the truth of the matter is, the question is a little bit moot. Why is the question a little bit moot? Because until Rabbeinu Gershom Maor HaGola came along about 1,000 years ago, the Rebbe of Rashi's Rebbe, and decreed that, no, and this was binding on Ashkenazic Jews, that a person is not allowed to marry more than one wife, without getting into the details of that, a person is technically allowed to marry more than one wife. So why after Tfiyas HaMesim would a person not get both wives back? Right? Okay, great. So he'll get both wives back. The question is, what happens in the case of my family? What happened in my family? Now this question is actually asked by the Sefer Matzav Hayasha. Not specifically about my family, but about the case of my family. My father is named for his grandfather. His grandfather, Yaakov Tzvi Marcus, lived in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, traveled around, I'm told, with a horse and a wagon, a peddler selling things in the different towns in Pennsylvania, and he'd carry around, he was pretty big, and he carried around a shotgun. Because in those days, people used to start up with Jews, and he would take out a shotgun and nobody would start up with him. So in any case, but the story went like this. It's a very interesting story. His name was Yaakov Tzvi. He married a girl named Leah. He had children with Leah, and Leah died very young. What did he do? Who was going to take care of his children? My great-grandfather Yaakov Tzvi married Leah's younger sister, whose name was, you got it, Rachel, you got it. And Rachel married my great-grandfather to help take care of her sister's children. And sure enough, my grandfather was the youngest, was born to Yaakov Tzvi and Rachel. Right? Now, after Tzvias HaMesim, it can't be. A person is not allowed to marry two sisters by Torah law. When? Simultaneously. You can marry a sister after a sister dies, right? Well, wait. One step at a time. One step at a time. So to this question, nobody has a definitive answer. Nobody knows which wife, in this case, as Rav Sadia Gaon said many centuries ago, we can't fathom what's going to be after Tfiyas HaMesim. Maybe we have proofs from text. This we don't have a proof, we're not obligated to figure it out. Okay, now if you do want to hear something disturbing, I can tell you something disturbing. The Chasam Sofer says he is not sure whether a person gets back all the wives that he had in this world. As a matter of fact, he says, the Chasam Sofer says, based on the Arizal, maybe I should say it, I tell it to you straight up, so even if it's disturbing, I'll say it. The Arizal, based on the Gemara and other sources, says there's something known as Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, a first match and a second match. The first match is the one that was decreed before a baby is born, who you are supposed to marry. Now, you might end up marrying that person in this world. You might not end up marrying that person in this world, because which wife you get in this world is based upon your actions. And it could be, although God had you for her and her for you, you will end up, when it comes time to get married, you will end up marrying not your Zivug Rishon, just based on your actions. Says Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, a great Kabbalist, that doesn't mean it won't be a wonderful marriage, a beautiful marriage. It could be spectacular marriage. You can have a great marriage even with the one who is not your basher, as they say. However, says the Chasam Sofer, based on the Arizal, no matter who you marry in this world, when it comes to the Asanasim, you get the original one, whether you married her or not in this world. You might not have even known her at all. That's what I mean by disturbing. Okay. That having been said, let's move on to something more pleasant. What about a woman? A woman cannot be married to two husbands. So what happens to a woman who married a number of men? You have women who were married to two, three, four, five people. Who is married to whom after Tzias HaMesim? So the Zohar says, a woman who is married to two men goes back to her first husband. However, the Kabbalists, such as the Rav Pa'alin, say that this is only in the case of death, not in the case of divorce. If a woman's husband dies and then she marries somebody else, she goes back to her first husband. But if a woman is married to somebody and gets divorced, and then marries somebody else after Tzias HaMesim, she gets her second husband, not her first husband. I'm sorry? That he'll get the first one back, the first sister back, and not the second one. I'm sorry? Yeah, the case is a person marries a sister, the sister dies, and then marries the other sister. So you get, according to this, you get the first sister back. Correct. According to this, you get the first sister back. Okay. Now, let's move to two other ideas of Tzias HaMesim that are relevant to us. Who we married doesn't... Okay, let's two other ideas of Tzias HaMesim relevant to us before we introduce Gan Eden and Gehenna, which are also very, very important concepts, but we're going to expand upon those primarily next Sunday in the thrilling conclusion. So, before we move on, we know that one of the psukim that we mention at a siyum is, that most people butcher when they say it, the hakitzosa hi tisichecha. When you wake up, it will be your meditation, it will be what you talk about. This is referring to the Torah, and says the Zohar, this means that when a person gets up at Tzias HaMesim, he will remember all the Torah that he learned the first time around. What does this mean? It means to us that even if you forget what you learned, if you forget what you learned, after Tzias HaMesim, you will remember what you learned. Now, learning is very important for Tzias HaMesim. The only merit that we have for Tzias HaMesim is the Torah that we learn. If a person does not learn Torah, he does not get Tzias HaMesim. What about a woman who doesn't learn Torah? A woman who learns Torah is fine. But let's say a woman doesn't learn Torah. The Gemara says a woman who doesn't learn Torah, by the fact that she brings her kids to study Torah and waits for her husband to come home from studying Torah, she has an equal share in their Torah, like the silent partner. The guy who invests the money, he collects just like the other guy. So a woman also collects just like a man. As a matter of fact, maybe even more than a man. The Vilna Gaon said, my wife has much more schar than I do. The Vilna Gaon was learning nonstop. Why does his wife have much more schar? He says, because when I get up, and he only slept 2 hours, not more than 2 hours a night, when I get up and go to the shul and learn the whole day, during the brutal Vilna winters in Lithuania, the shul is heated. In my house, we're poor, it's not heated. My wife suffers more from my Torah, so she has more schar than me. Amazing. Okay, so the Gemara talks about women getting schar. We'll get to the questions in a moment. But what comes out of this... says the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, that's the Baal HaTanya, the Rav Shneur Zalman of Liari, based on the Arizal, is don't think any Torah you study in this world and you work for goes to naught. In vain, if you forget it, you remember it all after Tzias HaMesim Vakitzosa, when you wake up, he tisichecha, that is what you're going to talk about. Because of this, and you might want to think about this, I'm not suggesting it for everybody, there are many people who study as much Torah as possible, even if they don't understand it in depth, because it'll come back to them at Tzias HaMesim. There are Breslovers, among others, I'm told, who sit there and just read Gemaras, even if they don't understand what's going on. Now, I'm not sure that's correct, because then maybe you remember it, but without knowing what's going on. But there are people who stress more Bikiyos learning with a broad scope rather than with depth, so that they accumulate a lot of Torah, and it'll come back to them, and then after Tzias HaMeisim, and they'll know all the Torah, basically. But there is the idea, by the way, there is the idea, independent of Tzias HaMeisim, that everybody has to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. You don't have to do it all in 1 year, you don't have to do it in 1 month. But over the course of a lifetime, a person is supposed to learn all of Tanakh, all of Shas Mishnayos, all of Talmud Bavli, all of Talmud Yerushalmi, and the Midrashim from the time of the Tanaim and Amoraim, and that is what's called Kol HaTorah Kula. And there are many people who, doctors, businessmen, lawyers, who do that over the course of a lifetime. They do it, they accomplish it, whether it's 20, 30 years, they have a plan and they do it. But everybody has to be working towards that. But anything that you learn here comes back to you, even if you forget it. You learn here this year, Maseches Sukkah, let's say you know it, but in a few years from now you don't know it, you don't review it, don't worry, you get it back after Tzias HaMeisim. There are just a few questions. People had hands up. Zvi, you had a hand up? Oh, so now, Zvi is referring to Gemara in Nida. The Gemara in Nida says a Malach teaches everybody before they're born, Kol HaTorah Kula, and then when a baby is born, the Malach hits him on the mouth, and he forgets it. So all of the Mefarshim on the Gemara asked the obvious question. You know how you say it in Aramaic? In Gemara talk, Mimanafshach. What does Mimanafshach mean? Either way you look at it, it's difficult. If Hashem wants us to know Kol HaTorah Kula, so why does Malach slap us and have us forget it? If Hashem doesn't want us to know it, so why are we taught it in the beginning? So the answer is, let me sharpen it even more. In other words, what this Gemara is telling us is that the Torah is not something external to us. It's deep down within us. When we work at the Torah and we learn it, we are digging deeply within ourselves and bringing out our true selves. It's not something external to us. It's something there at our very root. As a matter of fact, this might be related to deep down that even a Jew does so many averos, still we talk about the, as they say in Yiddish, the pinta liyid, that little Jewish spark, the spark of godliness that is through the Torah that the Malach teaches us, so to speak. Yes? We'll discuss that in a moment. Yes? Yeah, we're getting to that. Yes.
Which is the person that remember
the Torah? No. So the Torah that he learns in the womb, what a Torah that a person learns here, it has to be Torah that he acquires through his own hard work. Hashem wants us to know the Torah. He wants us to acquire it with our own hard work, but it's something within us. It's not something out there. Okay. Now, that having been said, there's one other important thing that we have to know, and that is, when it comes to Tzias HaMeisim, the Gemara in Ksuvos Kuf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, says that Meisim Shebachutz La'aretz Einam Chayim, the dead in Chutz La'aretz don't come back to life. Ela Tzadikim Shebachutz La'aretz Chayim Al Yidei Gilgul Mechilos. But that the righteous people in Chutz La'aretz come back to life through Gilgul Mechilos. What does that mean? So people say, rolling through tunnels? No. Rashi says it means that Hashem makes tunnels in the ground and they get up and they walk until Eretz Yisrael, and that is where they come out of the ground. Meaning, Tzias HaMeisim, the dead rising from the graves, is only in Eretz Yisrael. If somebody is buried in Chutz La'aretz, if he's a tzaddik, that's fine. They'll get here through walking underground, but coming out of the ground is only in Eretz Yisrael. The Yerushalmi in Kilayim goes a step further, Peret Kes Halacha Gimel, and says that the dead of Eretz Yisrael come back to life before the dead of Chutz La'aretz. The Zohar echoes that sentiment, and that is why so many people will invest a lot of money to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So please bear that in mind in terms of learning and in terms of where you're buried. Tzias HaMeisim should maybe play a role. Now, what people asked last time, what Danny was referring to, I said we would get to that. That is, one second. If there is Gilgal, and there are a lot of different incarnations, so which one comes back? Which body comes back at Chiyas HaMeisim? So the Noda B'Yehuda, who wrote the Tzlach, the Tzion Menefesh Chayam, Meseches Brachos, he asks, if we believe in Gilgal Neshamos, which body gets up? All the bodies? Or only the last one? Which one? So the Magid Meisharim, who is a Malach, who taught the Beis Yosef, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and the Beis Yosef recorded, Rav Yosef Karo recorded it in a sefer called Magid Meisharim, from the Malach told him, all the bodies get up. That is not so simple. The Arve Nachal says, no. Why do we come in a Gilgal? We come in a Gilgal only to fix what we didn't fix the previous times around. Therefore, the Arve Nachal says that only the last body, which is totally fixed, comes back. The Kiddush HaSlevi, Reb Levi Yitzchak Berditchever, who is the great tzaddik whose yahrzeit was last week, says no. He says every time a person comes back in a Gilgal, it's to fix something that he previously didn't fix. So maybe this time he did a mitzvah with his hand he never previously did. Kept doing away from Averos with his hand. Did tshuva for a certain Avera he did with a part of his body. So in each Gilgal, something else was fixed. Says the Kiddush HaSlevi, Reb Levi Yitzchak, when a person comes back in Chiyas HaMeisim, it's a, how do they say nowadays? A composite, right? A composite body of the different parts that he fixed each time around. There is one more opinion that everybody should hear, just to know the power of one mitzvah. We don't know, until we learn Kabbalah deeply, exactly what each mitzvah does for our soul. But the B'nai Yisaskar, Rav Tzvi Elimelech of Dinav, says that that it really depends on one specific mitzvah, meaning any body that totally fixed itself comes back. But even if a body didn't totally fix itself, but it fulfilled the mitzvah of, and it's an unbelievable thing because it's maybe the most number one observed mitzvah by all Jews, assimilated and not, in America, and that is Ner Chanukah. As long as you fulfill the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, that body that fulfilled the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, it is going to come back. Very interesting. Okay. Who comes back? The answer is any Jews that learn Torah or have the zechus of Torah that do mitzvos. But what about Jews who don't? So the Bach assumes that Rishayim, who don't have anything to their credit, they don't come back at Chiyas HaMeisim. What about non-Jews? The non-Jews come back at Chiyas HaMeisim? The answer is, if they're righteous, they absolutely do. The Rambam says it, others say it. However, a non-Jew who is a Rasha, forget about it, done, finished. Okay, now we've discussed Chiyas HaMeisim, which is forever, according to the Ramban, or the lead into forever, according to the Ramban. But what happens between when a person dies and Chiyas HaMeisim? So according to both, it's a question of semantics, but the body and soul separate, the body gets buried, and the soul goes and decomposes, the soul goes to the Olam HaNeshamos, according to Ramban. According to the Rambam, it's called Olam Haba, but it means the same thing. What is that? It's a place where the soul exists independent of the body, and the soul is, according to everybody, according to Chazal, judged after being in this world. How long is a soul judged for? Generally, I think everybody knows the answer to this question. Generally?
11 months, max.
Generally 12 months, unless very, very bad. And then, it could be forever. 12 months is not going to do Hitler, Yimach Shemo, justice. Do you know what I mean? And other of these superstars throughout history. So it's much longer for them. Now what? Yes. discuss now judgment right after Kriyas HaMeisim. We're talking about now pre-death, right after death, when the soul is judged. Okay, now, when the soul is judged, and we're talking about the world of souls, Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, we're about to finish. We have two terms that we generally use. Those two terms in the world of souls are Gan Eden and Gehenna. Those are the two words that we use. Gan Eden and Gehenna. Gan Eden is in this past week's parasha. Gehenna is not used in the Torah. There are references in Tanakh. There are a lot of different names for Gehenna, but Gehenna is all over the Gemara. It's not just you do something, you get cut off, you don't get Olam Haba. There is real suffering for somebody who does averos, who doesn't fulfill mitzvot. What kind of suffering? What is Gehenna all about? What's the reward? What is Gan Eden all about? We're not going to finish that this week. Suffice it to say that the Ramban writes that Gan Eden is an actual physical place in this world. He tells stories about doctors who went there to try to find the Eitz HaChayim. He says, but when a soul completes its journey in this world, he doesn't go to that physical place. That physical place, it's so beautiful, it's amazing. That is just a mashal, that is just a metaphor for what happens to the soul after this world. We'll get into that, we'll discuss Gan Eden next time, but suffice it to say that wrap all the pleasures of this world together into one awesome pleasure, one moment of pleasure. It can't touch even one split second of the pleasure of Gan Eden. So we're going to have to discuss Gan Eden. We're also going to have to discuss Gehenna. There is actually something called Mesechta Gehenna. That's statements from Chazal brought by earlier sources all about hell. But the number one association with Gehenna is, in the Gemara and elsewhere, is fire. Right? Fire. What does that mean? The Ramban again says it is a metaphor. It is a metaphor. Again, it's not physical. We're talking about spiritual. In what way is it a metaphor? That we will have to discuss next week. There are seven levels of Gehenna. You might have heard about that. Seven Meduros Shel Gehenna, or the seven furnaces, or the seven fires of Gehenna. What are each of these for? Belineder, we will discuss Gan Eden. We will discuss Gehenna and try to wrap it up, the Ezras Hashem, next Sunday at 5:30. Thank you very much. Yeah, he's asking me.